Welcome to the Tinnelly Talks podcast, where we dive into the common legal issues facing today's community associations. Whether you're a manager, board member, or homeowner, you're sure to pick up on some nuggets of advice to help you build a successful community in this ever-evolving and changing world.
Welcome to Tinnelly Talk, the show that breaks down the legal issues affecting community associations. I'm Ramona Acosta.
And I'm Matt Plaxton.
And today we're talking about emotional support animals in the pool area with Wendy Buckham. Wendy has over 25 years of experience working with community associations and is currently serving her sixth year as a member of Mission Viejo City Council. She has a strong background in business and frequently volunteers in local classrooms for sports teams and at Mission Viejo Nadadora Swim Meets. Hi, Wendy. Thank you for joining us.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I have been getting a lot more swims in this summer.
Nice!
Yeah, the pools are open now, so you can.
They are. You got to make reservations, which guarantees you a lane on your own, which is not a bad thing.
Nice. Well, we want to talk to you today about emotional support animals. I know it's something that has affected you as your role in the city, but it's also affected you as your role with working with community associations. Is this something that you've experienced frequently lately?
As far as the animals being around facilities, this is something that is experienced. If it's not lately, it's probably a little bit less, but over time that's been a very common thing. Mission Viejo is a very animal friendly, dog friendly community. We do have rules that you have to follow, and so from time to time things do come up where we'll come in as a city and help homeowners and homeowner associations address issues with animals. So it does happen, yes.
Nice. Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, in terms of our practice, we have been experiencing a lot more of that lately. I can recall off the top of my head at least half a dozen times in the last couple months.
Yeah.
Where we have homeowners wanting to bring their pets into the pool area.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, can we allow them? You know, we're concerned about the dog being in the small confined area with other people. And dogs, you know, depending on the pet owner, might be cleaner than others, you know, but they do tend to use the restroom and they don't follow etiquette, like going to a restroom or a toilet, right? You know,
right.
So there are those concerns. So, you know, we see this a lot more frequently in our communities lately,
right.
Especially mid and high rise communities.
So. You know, and I would say in HOAs, it's gonna happen more right now. Cities have been a little more lax on opening facilities than HOAs. So I would say that right now you may see it more in HOAs. And I want to encourage people to make sure that whatever rules are being applied, especially when it comes to pets, that they're applied evenly across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't allow pets in an area, then but service dogs have to be allowed in those areas, please don't hesitate to reach out to your local city and ask your city animal control for guidance if you're not sure about things.
Mm-hmm.
Use them as a resource. I think a lot of times we forget that there's a partner out there that has expertise,
right,
that can help you with animals. If there's a leash law in the city, which most cities have, it gets enforced across to everything, and certainly have a rule to reinforce it.
Absolutely. I think that's a very important point. You know, a lot of times associations look to legal counsel to get things done right away.
Right.
And to some degree, there are mechanisms that allow us to do that. You know, go to court, get a temporary injunction. Very expensive, of course. But you have a dog that, even if it's an emotional support animal or service animal that has violent propensities and has attacked residents, you know, get animal control involved because they have the means to,
right,
you know, get things done a lot quicker than typically HOAs do, you know, and so that's a great point, you know, reach out to animal control for help too.
Yeah, so true. And I think it's important too that you make sure that you follow, you have to ask very specific questions about a service animal.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the purpose of the animal and how is that animal assisting you?
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Animal control will want to understand what your rules in your HOA are, and they can only enforce what the law or the ordinances are in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to be able to go further than that. So
right. Make
sure you're being a good partner
aware
there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Matt, this issue came to light because we recently had a board member who reached out to us through the blog, and they specifically wanted to know about emotional support animals in the pool area. They received a complaint from a fellow homeowner that another member was bringing their dog into the pool area, and it became an issue of, well, is this a dog? Is this animal allowed in the pool area? And if it is, you know, is it allowed in the pool?
Right.
So what should the association do when they receive that kind of request?
You should encourage it, right? Let the dog swim. That's cute. Well, I've seen a little dog swimming around the pool. Isn't that fun? No, of course not. You know, in terms of, you know, if an association receives a request to or is notified of a homeowner who is allowing their pet in the pool area, generally speaking, pets are not allowed. I mean, that's generally a violation of some, you know, rule or regulation either in their CCNRs or in their rules and regs that prohibit pets from the pool area. It's usually also on that big sign in the pool area that says no pets, right? And so, you know, the association has the authority to enforce that rule against the homeowner and prevent them from bringing that pet into the pool area or that dog. But that's not always the case if it is a support animal,
right?
Now, this is an emotional support animal and it's necessary to improve the impacts of a disability, then yeah, the association may have to make an accommodation to allow that owner to bring their pet into the pool area, at least on the pool deck, not in the pool, of course. But
well, you mentioned previously, you know, sometimes you might have a dog that is a loud barker or is violent, you know, and the members tend to know better than we do, and sometimes better than the manager does or the board does, about a particular animal because this is their neighbor. So, you know, just because somebody wants to bring an emotional support animal into the pool area, does that mean that the dog can just go run amok because it's supporting the person?
Right. No, absolutely. Even if we are allowed, or I shouldn't say allowed, required to grant an accommodation to allow this resident to bring their pet into the pool area, that doesn't void any other restrictions in the rules and regulations governing pet, you know, maintenance, right? So the association could still require the use of a leash while in these common areas, including the pool area, you know, pick up waste and things like that. So yeah, it doesn't allow them unfettered access to the common area, and all those rules applying to pets now don't apply to this one because it's an emotional support animal. But, you know, really the important thing is to figure out, well, is this actually an emotional support animal? And does the association need to grant an accommodation to this homeowner? Because, you know, you get those homeowners or residents who, you know, get their certificates off the internet saying, this is my ESA. Because really, that's all you have to do now. You just file an application on some website and you can print out a certificate that says, my dog's an emotional support animal. And so HOAs are allowed to inquire, make reasonable inquiry with that pet owner about the nature of the disability. An association may request reliable disability-related information that is, one, necessary to verify that the person meets the definition of disability, right? So they have to meet the definition of a disability under the Fair Housing Act or the Fair Employment and Housing Act for California, right? Two, describes the needed accommodation. What's the accommodation that's needed? I need to be allowed to bring my pet into the pool area. And show the relationship between that person's disability and the need for accommodation.
Right.
So because I have general anxiety disorder, I need my pet with me at the pool, because if my pet's not with me at the pool, I get more anxious and, you know, I might, you know, drowned or whatever, you know, the case may be. You need to show at least a nexus between your disability and that accommodation request, right?
Right.
And that's perfectly allowable. You can ask for this information.
Mm-hmm.
And this was through a publication by the, a joint publication through the Department of Justice and Housing and Urban Development. So in that publication, they said that housing providers, such as an HOA, can request this information. Because I know there's like a lot of misinformation out there that you can't inquire, period, as to their disability and all that stuff. And that's not generally true with HOAs.
Well, and in cities, we basically teach our team members in most cities, you can ask, a lot of times it's very obvious that the animal is a service animal because they're wearing some sort of a vest that has a designation on it. But you can ask, this is a service animal, and you can also ask, what work or task has the dog been trained to perform in this realm. Let's say somebody has a dog that helps them with, they don't have good mobility in their legs, potentially, or they have they have dogs that sense seizures. Mm-hmm. Those types of things can be very, and that's good because that person's going to be safer in that environment,
right.
Especially pools. Mm-hmm. So in cities, I will tell you, oftentimes cities, pools, will allow a dog that's specifically trained to help a person that's maybe doing lap swimming or very specific thing. They many times will make an accommodation for that person, for that dog to go into the pool for a city.
Really?
Totally. Wow. Different than an HOA. But that's where sometimes, and mm-hmm. I'm saying this because I think sometimes people have a tendency to say, well, I can do it over there, so why can't I do it here?
Yeah.
So people have to remember, city property can be many times different than private property, which is an HOA.
Right.
And I think that that can create conflict, for absolutely. HOAs.
Absolutely.
And if a homeowner were to contact Animal Services, and it turns out it's an ESA or it's a service animal, Animal Services is going to go through that investigative process.
Yes.
To make sure that, you know, that this dog is supposed to be there and is in fact a service animal.
Yes. Yes. And you can, there is a voluntary registration for service animal with in most cities. Some require it, some are voluntary. So I would say if somebody has a service animal out there, that's another way to verify have they registered
right.
it. I mean, is this service animal so important to you that you've actually registered it, which I would, if I needed one, I would certainly do it.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, a lot of residents think all I have to do is present this certificate and that's sufficient. And as, you know, we were just talking about, that's technically not true. Mm-hmm. You know, we need more information because we need to be able to identify what the disability is in order to determine if it is a disability recognized under the Act, which it, is a disability that impacts a major life activity.
Right.
Right? Those people that suffer from major depressive disorder does impact a major life activity, their ability to cope, you know, out in public with other people right. and things like that. So that's why the dog is there to assist with that disability, right?
Right.
But we wouldn't know that just generally looking at them, right? And that's why we need to request that information. There are other disabilities, though, that are generally recognizable, right? And then you don't need to request that information because
right.
you know.
Yeah, right? So if it's not visible, like
yeah,
I
exactly.
mentioned, then you have the right to do some reasonable inquiry.
Exactly. If it's visible, HOA, don't ask. You already know.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now you should grant the accommodation. But if it's not visible, yeah, you can inquire about it. And what is that inquiry? Typically, what do they send to you? Well, it's a doctor's note, right? From, you know, a medical doctor or other, you know, professional like psychiatrist, psychologist. And it'll explain that the person suffers from this mental disorder or this disorder, whatever the case may be. And they need the dog to assist or to ameliorate those effects. And once we get that letter, that's generally enough, right? That's all we need,
yeah.
You know, because HOA shouldn't be in a position to say no. We should be in a position to say yes if you provide us with this information,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So we shouldn't take this approach where we're like, no, absolutely not, you know, never under any circumstance. We should say, be in a position where we say yes, but give us the evidence we need to allow that, right? Because we're going to get a lot of homeowners complaining
exactly.
about it.
Exactly. Why that dog's in there? Why can't my dog be in there? That's going to come up all the time.
Well, Matt, I think you hit on a good point, is that these are community associations. So the gut reaction shouldn't be no. The gut reaction should be, okay, how can we accommodate this member
right.
who's a member of the community, who's paying their assessments, who's, you know, in all pretenses is a good neighbor.
Yeah, they have they have just as much reason to use the pool as everyone else,
yeah.
but maybe they can't use the pool because of this disability and their dog makes it now so they can.
Right.
Right, so I love the way you put it. You put it more eloquently than I did. We should come out of position, no.
Yeah.
How can we make this work for you? That's
yeah.
how we should approach
it's
it.
That's great. And, you know, with people being home and using their community facilities more, and they're maybe working from home, so people, it's just going to happen more in HOAs. It really is.
Oh, especially right now with COVID,
yep.
you know,
mm-hmm.
anxiety is really high, stresses are high, you know. You know, pool is a great outlet now
mm-hmm.
that they finally are open again, but these people have, you know, these disabilities that make it more difficult for them to use the pool. So having their emotional support animal with them will definitely help them to be able to enjoy those facilities. Yeah.
Well, Wendy, you touched on something a minute ago, and you talked about that the city will sometimes make an accommodation to allow an animal in the pool. And I think a lot of times we talk about, okay, well, the ESA, the emotional support animal, it can be in the pool area, it can be on the pool deck, but there are some health concerns about the animal swimming in the pool water.
Right.
So to both of you, how do you address that type of situation? You know, that the animal is in the pool area, may or may not be allowed in the pool water. The pool areas most typically are not monitored. There's not a lifeguard on duty.
Right.
There's not a pool monitor on duty. So
that's true.
You know, how does the association address that particular situation? And how does the association know when to say yes or when to say no when it comes to the pool water?
Yeah, and I think, you know, generally speaking, we shouldn't allow pets in the pool water for health concerns, you know, without getting too disgusting about things, you know. But the reality is that's why, you know, some associations require people to shower before they go in the
right.
pool, because there's elevated levels of stuff in the water as a result of not showering before, which makes, you know, people more susceptible to becoming sick or to get sick by swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true with pets. If we allow pets to swim in the pool, you know, it increases or elevates the chance that residents might get sick as a result of swimming in that pool. And, you know, city pools, you know, they typically have full support staff on
yes.
site that are
Correct.
Constantly maintaining and cleaning the pool water, whereas associations with limited fiscal resources don't have the money to have on-site staff there all day long, making sure the pH is balanced, all the chemicals are in the pool, things like that. So that's why I think HOAs, like you were pointing out earlier, is
yeah.
kind of in a different position
different.
Than the city, because we can't clean the pool as often, or we don't have someone there constantly there checking, cleaning, and maintaining the pool.
Right.
So.
I agree. And I think that's important for people to hear, because if they see it in one pool and in more of a public pool setting, it's probably going to be a very rare occurrence. I would tell you, in all my years of swimming, I have never seen an animal jump in and swim with somebody. I've never seen it. I will say that there was one person that I knew that had a dog that helped them, and they were an avid swimmer, but I've never seen the dog go into the water, only to the water.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a rare occurrence, and I would say remind people that cities have different regulations than HOAs.
Right.
You know, so all of you listening out there, the big difference, and you hit on it a little bit, there's usually a lot more staff at these city pools that are regulating them than other places.
Yeah.
And HOAs specifically.
All right. Well, you know, we've have the homeowner who has a disability, who has received permission from the association to have their dog in the pool area. Everything is going great until one day something happens and the dog gets aggressive. Somebody gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Now what do we do? Because again, now we're dealing with a reasonable accommodation and a disability, and now we might be in a little bit of a sticky wicket.
Right, and for the same reasons why we can, you know, prevent the dog from going in the pool for health and safety concerns. Under the joint statement issued by the Department of Justice and Housing and Urban Development, if a dog demonstrates violent propensities or has a known temperament to attack other people, then the association can have that animal not only removed from the common area, but actually removed from the development entirely.
Mm-hmm.
They are not, as long as their rules and regulations allow them to have that authority to remove animals. The accommodation that's provided does not extend to animals with violent propensities. And that's because it increases the chance of harm to others in the community, which also increases liability exposure to the association. So
it goes back to that reasonable and that reasonable accommodation,
yep.
right?
Exactly.
They can't create a harm to others or create a mm-hmm. burden to the rest of the community.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put in my notes here, so if Otis, sorry, Ramona, has known propensities for attacking others, The association may deny the pet owner's request, and poor Otis can't go to the pool.
Yeah, poor Otis can't go to the pool area.
Otis gets along great with humans.
I was going to say, Otis
not
is a very,
other dogs.
Otis is a very cute dog.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
man. So.
Yes, he's a people dog.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
He is.
He'd be there lounging on the chair, just like, yeah, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Yeah. I'm here. I can see it.
Hanging out.
Well, thank you, both of you, for joining us
did
today.
Get through everything?
We did get through everything.
Oh, wonderful.
That was really awesome. Wendy, I really do appreciate you coming
in
and speaking to us, especially with regard to the city services. I agree with you. I think that as association managers and I think sometimes as legal counsel, we completely forget that there's this resource that's out there that we're already paying for.
That's right.
That can help us with a lot of these issues.
No, and I mean, I would say this to folks also. I use the word city because many of us are in cities, but there's a lot of people in associations that are in an unincorporated, and you have county resources available to you, and you pay taxes for those, so don't forget to use them.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times, like I said, they have mechanisms that mm-hmm. can get things done a lot quicker.
And you actually alluded to that earlier in the podcast about, you know, don't forget to call. I mean, it's okay to get those, use those resources to get some information.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because there will be some real legal issues that could come up.
Yes.
Exactly. As, you know, especially issues like this. I mean, you know, if the association takes a litigious approach at the outset with these accommodation requests, it almost inevitably will result in a filing with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing.
Yep.
And we get those DFEH complaints, and then we have to prepare a response. And it's a long, drawn-out process. If you've ever experienced it, you know they have a year to complete their investigation.
Oh, Lord.
And so it takes a very long time. Well, what do you do in the interim? I mean, in the interim, you probably should allow that animal to use, be able to go in the pool area with you, because if they've provided you with sufficient information, you should have granted that request already, right? And if they're unwilling to provide that information, you know, maybe you don't. And you, but you run the risk that, you know, the DFEH might find you culpable, right?
Yeah.
You've denied a legitimate request for an accommodation. Mm-hmm. And the penalties for that can be pretty significant, right?
Yeah.
And one of the most important penalties that I know a lot of board members and managers hate is discrimination training, right? You have to go up to L.A., and sit in an all-day discrimination class.
Mm-hmm.
No one likes that. So,
no.
So moral of the story, if an association gets a request for a reasonable accommodation, contact legal counsel, check your city resources, because there's some things that the city might be able to help you with, and you know, and legally there are questions that you can ask, there are questions that you are not able to ask. So, you know, you want to make sure that you're doing this the right way.
Absolutely. And you know, most attorneys in this industry probably already have this. They have a policy for associations to adopt when responding to an accommodation request. And if you don't already have that, you know, have contact your legal counsel to put one together for you. So that acts as a framework for the community manager, or if it's self-managed, the board members to, you know, follow when you know, reviewing an accommodation request.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then
point.
When it's a gray area, or if it's not, you know, if the homeowner's, you know, not providing the information that's requested, then at that point, you might want to get legal counsel involved, because we might have the tools needed in order to, you know, pull this information out, or, you know, be able to explain under the law why we're entitled to this information. Cool.
Well, that's
great. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
To our audience, make sure you check out our website at tinleylaw.com if you haven't already, where we break down this episode and we include a link to our blog article, HOA Restrictions on Emotional Dogs in the Pool Area. Then make sure you stay tuned for our next episode, where we discuss neighbor-to-neighbor disputes.
To share or subscribe to the Tinley Talks podcast, visit us at tinleylaw.com. There you can find links to everything discussed in this episode, locate helpful resources, check out other episodes, and submit questions for future topics. And be sure to tune in next month for our next episode. As always, the views and opinions expressed by the podcast, its presenters and guests do not constitute legal advice. For more information on the topics discussed in today's podcast, please consult with your association's legal counsel. This is Tinley Talks, presented by Tinley Law Group, your community, your counsel.